haven't actually sat together and talked for a long time. It's nice to be able to talk to you now. Steven Duras is a guitar player, lighting designer, produces his own stuff, so he's also an engineer by default. Let me start with something I remember you telling me. The guitar wasn't your first instrument. Keyboards were, right? By several years. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. And thank you for having me on here. This is fantastic. And it's great to talk with you again. It was the organ, actually. That was my first instrument. And it's an organ is similar to the keyboards. It's like what they used to play in theaters. They had a couple of keyboards, some pedals, and top stops and tabs.
What was it that won you over to the guitar that you didn't get from the keyboard?
On my journey to the guitar, I had also touched upon drums, and then it was the sound of the guitar, the electric guitar. And I was listening to the radio one night when I was 12, and I heard Def Leppard, this Hysteria album, which was produced by Mutt Lange. And he did a phenomenal job of just layering these guitar tones and these guitar sounds. It was just fantastic. And those guitar tones, the way they played it, it wasn't the solos, wasn't even shred guitar. It was very tastefully played and just nice vibrato and clean tones blended into the distorted tones. I was in shock. I remember listening. I was having headphones on and I was like, wow, how do I do that? How do I get that sound?
Right.
I was in this mental block where I only would listen to that one song, and I don't know why, I just didn't want to hear anything else from the record.
Right.
But the next song came on, and I remember thinking, oh, I like this too. I was on a camping trip with my grandfather, and I was listening in headphones while he drove across, we're going across Canada. And I was like, wow. And then I flipped the tape over, and I listened to the next song, and which was Gods of War, and they came in with these guitar riffs, and I was just, man, the whole record is a greatest hits album in itself. It's just really so well produced, and the guitar flavoring on that record, it really blew me away. So when I came home, I knew I needed to get a guitar.
Is Mutt Lange the producer that has everybody play the thing like four or five times, and then he stacks those sounds?
Correct. Yeah, from what I've read, he had them layering even the guitar parts one string at a time for certain parts. And
even the chords?
I believe so. Some of the chords too. And it was it took a long time to produce that record from what I understand. And it's a very cool article to read or watch a documentary on just the producing of that record and how it all came together. And that was the record where the drummer Rick Allen had, sadly lost his arm before. So they they got him a Simmons drum kit, and he had to relearn how to play with one arm, and they got the foot pads. And it was very creative how they did it. Sounds fantastic.
Right. There's a quote, I think, and I hope I'm getting it right, by John McLaughlin, who after playing with Paco de Lucía said something like, flamenco guitar is the best guitar technique that exists. Would you agree with that?
I would believe that. And especially after I started studying with Paco Arroyo here in Glendale in my very early 20s, I was blown away by the power of the instrument and the technique and the precision that he was playing with. It was on a whole other level that I've not seen at that point up to that time.
Right. You also have done lighting design, especially for Toto, and so in really big venues. Is there some sort of synergy that you find between doing lights and doing music? Obviously, as a lighting designer, if you have a music background, you hit the cues better because you know the rhythms and the music. Is there the other way as well? Does your lighting design, did it influence how you play guitar or how you write music?
That's a good question. I'm not so sure how it influences me as a musician, but what does influence me as a musician is the travels and the experiences I've had through lighting. that's been a big one because it's brought me to so many different places in the world. Just, I mean, I've been over to over 50 countries now, and it's been an amazing experience. And I definitely think there's some, you know, picking out the certain colors, the certain feelings that you have, that comes mm-hmm. with me, that comes home with me. And I'm sure it finds itself, it finds its place into my, you know, creativity, into music.
Yeah. Would you agree that travel is probably the best way to open your mind to things that are different, not just food, but also music, culture, language, all of that stuff?
I feel it's the best education one could ever get.
Right. Yeah. I hear you. Let's talk about creativity. Do you have a preferred way to start a song, let's say? Do you start with a rhythm or some chord changes or with a melody, or is there no specific way that you prefer to start something?
It's kind of a mixed bag with me. I don't really have a certain, you know, way I go about it. I don't have a formula. It could just be, I mean, the last song I just did, Shades of Summer, I was hearing that idea in my head for quite a long time, and I kept just pushing it in the back of my mind. You know, I remember I was in the shower a few months ago, and I kept hearing it, you know, and I was like, okay, I got to just do this song. And I mean, that was a song that it just pretty much wrote itself. And I love it when that happens, you know.
Right.
It's just, I tapped into something and I just went with it, and it was fantastic. I mean, it came together so quickly, and then other times things just don't. I don't know why. But I mean, just the other day I was playing a lot of it's keyboard based. I love, you know, getting on my hands on the keys and hearing synth sounds. I'm really inspired by hearing different sounds on the synths, and I'll almost prefer to start with keyboards more than I do with the guitar.
Yeah, I definitely hear you on that there is no method, but on that particular song, it has a rhythm that's almost a little more rockish. The drums are very straight. There is no, you know, bounce to that. Is that what you heard first, or did you hear the whole thing?
I heard the melody in my head first, the lead melody. And then the groove came right along with that. So it was almost together. I just wanted something a little more straightforward. And it was just a whole new kind of direction in a sense. And then I brought the electric guitar in. It just seemed to work for me. And the whole thing was fun. You know, if it's not fun after a while and you feel like you're really trying, then it's time to put the guitar down and revisit it another time.
I hear you. In that sense, are you relieved that you're not a quote unquote traditional flamenco player? Because the limitations of that, the sort of, that's not as traditional as this one is, or that one's not as, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
That would just take the creativity right out of you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, unless one really has a strong passion to only do that. And I as much as I study with Paco, I'm definitely not a flamenco guitar player, but I really feel strongly. I did my homework with the rhythm part with him. But getting back to your question, I personally am too much of a creative person. I don't like to be painted into a corner, if you will. And I'm not trying to disrespect the tradition by any means. But for me, I need no boundaries at all. Like anything with a boundary, whether it was in school or within, you know, anybody, oh, you can't do that. You know, that really it pets my fur in the wrong direction.
Right. I definitely can hear that. Then do you have like any sort of method or secret of how you kickstart creativity? You know, sometimes I find that I you know, I'm getting nowhere with a song, and, you know, everybody seems to have different methods or little tricks of things that they can do to just bring them into a better, more creative place. Do you have a secret or none?
I'm not sure I have a secret, but I find that going on a walk can help, a nice walk. I love walks. I find that I have tried to become more aware of how I'm feeling. I can tell when I'm in a very creative mode, and I can tell when I'm kind of not. I mean, I'm always feeling like it never leaves me. I'm always like my brain just won't shut off sometimes, but sometimes it's more intense than others. I think when I am just feeling like I have to try and start something and it's just not happening, I've really learned to just take a break and walk away from it and come back another time or try something different, perhaps.
Right. I find that extremely important for myself as well, where it gets to the point where now I know, excuse me, if I play a solo on something or even just a melody, I am not able to make a judgment on that right away. I just can't. I'll go listen to it and I'm like, oh, that's crap. But I find that if I give it a few hours or preferably a day or two, then I can go in and I go, wow, that's actually pretty neat. Or if I do this a little different, then it'll be right on. But there's something about, you know, not being able to judge very well as it's happening. It's almost like you're switching between the engineer and the creative player. And when you're in that creative player mode, you can't really edit that well because you're somewhere else.
Yeah, I think something that has been a challenge that I feel that I've gotten better at is trying to be engineer and performer at the same time. I think it would be wonderful to have that experience, which I never really had back in like the 80s and 90s, where you were able to just focus on performing and you have someone on the other side of the glass saying, you know, whatever they're saying or not saying anything at all, but you don't have to worry about quickly pressing a stop button or a record or, oh shit, I didn't have the phantom power on my microphone's not working. You know, you know. So, hell, the other day I wasn't getting anything in my headphones and I was like checking the, you know, the whole routing. I just didn't have the cans plugged in, you know?
Yeah. I hate that thing. When you're ready to go, you're over there, you're checking your headphones, you're ready, you hit play on the remote and it says, you know, that you haven't armed a track for recording, and then you have to take the headphones off, put the guitar down, walk back into the control room and go, okay, couldn't you have figured that out by yourself, computer?
Exactly. And it also, it takes you out of that whole mindset of you're it's a whole different mindset of performing versus, you know, being on the other side of the glass. And just even to take you out of that mindset just for a second to go over, you may have lost a feeling or a vibe or a performance that you would have had. Who knows?
Right. So I've worked with one engineer who was always aiming to capture what you were doing in the studio. So, you know, even if the levels weren't right, he didn't say, stop right now, let me do the levels and move that microphone a little over. He's just going to hit record. You know, we did that on a lot of the Opium record. And later I used another engineer who was the opposite. He was like, no, I've got to check this, I've got to do this. And of course, he was furiated with the first engineer's work because he was like, that's not an optimal level. So there's so many different characters that you'll meet in recording that I actually, when I started engineering my own, as you said, there is you know, problems with that. But overall, I loved not having somebody there and adding their personality to the mix. I don't have to wait for them, right? I don't have to wait for them. I don't come out and they say, well, I think you can do better. I know that myself. I don't need somebody to tell me, right? We're our own worst critics.
I couldn't agree more. That you said it so well, and that's the icing on the cake, to be able to do it yourself here at the house. And one thing I do is I listen like a lot after I'll lay at night and listen to a track over and over and over and over the performance to a point to the where I'm like, oh, this part's really, I'm not feeling this part. I just, for some reason, all of a sudden it's hitting me. I don't like this guitar line here. So, you know, I may go back and change it or I may get used to it. And something that's also important is to, like you said, walk away from it for a few days and come back with a fresh perspective. You know, makes a difference.
Making notes is huge. Just listening and making notes and then going in fresh again and changing it. I agree.
And it's hard to, for me, to find that fine line of when to take a break and when, you know, when to not. I think it's easy for me to get a little too confused and then I become almost an overachiever. And then it actually makes it worse. It's just overthinking.
Yeah, but since you're recording in your house, I'm sure somebody will snap you out of it. If it's like more than 5 hours, they're like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that, and another thing I've been really enjoying is video. And I find it's a similar format to editing video and shooting as it is to recording. I think there's some parallels there, which I find that are enjoyable, not having someone else do it for you. You get to make the decisions and get the shots that you want and get to have your vision out there versus perhaps somebody else's.
Right. Do you think creativity is aimed at a particular talent, or do you think creativity is more sort of a stench that follows you and does, you know, you want to try all kinds of things? I don't know a musician that doesn't also cook, that doesn't also have an interest in fine arts. You know, I mean, there may be some, but most people, it's a whole thing. You know, creativity is not just I play guitar and that's all I'm interested in and all I'm doing. Like you said, you do video and other things, right?
Oh, it spills over into every aspect of my life. It's not something I choose. It's like it chose me since I was a kid. I mean, I'm also terribly distracted because I feel my brain is just constantly creating. I mean, I could have somebody talking to me, having a conversation, and all of a sudden, without me knowing it, I just switch right off. I don't hear what they're saying anymore. I'm not even aware of it. And I'm hearing a melody in my head, or I'm thinking of something creative, whatever it is. And then they'll be finished talking. And I almost wonder, what did you say? I was just, you know, but I don't do it on purpose, you know, and even it's been like this all my life in school, grade school, that the teachers would be, you know, needs to pay attention more in class. You know, I'm just off in my own land half the time in my own world, but it spills over into lighting. I mean, I love creating with lighting. I've been with, like you said, with Toto, that lights for them for almost 20 years and a lot of other artists, to cooking. I cook a lot. I have, you know, my little all clad pans and my licorice. Now I don't want to say I'm a great cook, but I love experimenting with it. I love, you know, trying different foods and trying to learn and see what would make it better. And gosh, I mean, doing renderings. I love doing drawings. I did the art for Steve Lukather's guitar, you know, signature guitar pedal. I was grateful for that opportunity. And even I found that drawing is a good way for me to have art therapy. If I'm feeling frustrated about something, I can draw and channel my energy through a drawing. It is in every aspect of my life.
Drawing an exploding head is better than making a head explode.
You said it right.
Well, we've already said how, you know, creative arts, you know, a lot of stuff comes together. What's your favorite color, and do you have a favorite museum or a favorite artist?
My favorite color is blue. I believe it comes out without me even knowing it because I try and light Toto, especially up in these rich, deep blue colors. And a few years ago, a friend of mine on the great German Toto production crew, Erich, he had showed me these beautiful photos of this Klein blue. And I immediately had to go out and find it at a museum. And one of my favorite things to do on tour on a day off was to go for a walk and go to an art museum. I just loved going to the art museums. And one day I came across, I turned a corner and I walked in and I saw an Yves Klein, a huge, beautiful Yves Klein piece of work. And it was the visual impact from that, to see it in person, was fantastic. I just, you know, pictures don't do it justice. You need to see it with your own eyes.
Agreed. Yeah. Was it one of the sponge paintings or one of the just plain canvases with the blue, or was it one of the ones where he paints a model and then the model is printed on the canvas?
It was a canvas and it had this texture to it. It was a very beautiful swirling. I can't even describe it, but it had depth to it. It had this texture. Mm. And what I find is very interesting is that they create, I guess, the paint. It's from a rock in Afghanistan that was brought over by Italian traders in the 14th or 15th century to Europe. And I guess they grind this into a powder. I'm not exactly sure how it's made, but it's just, I find it fascinating. And then they can put it on the canvas.
Well, what made that different, you know, is like paintings are either, you know, oil paintings, in which case the medium to hold the pigment and to make it adhere to the canvas is an oil, obviously. What Yves Klein did is he wanted a more pure pigment that is not diluted by oil or water or anything else. So he apparently worked with a chemist to find a different way to adhere as pure of a pigment as possible to the canvas, which is why, I think it took people a long time to make anything that's even close.
Amazing. And he inspired, from what I understand, a lot of different art forms, simplistic art, modern art. He was a big inspiration for a lot of artists, you know, changing the way they painted and their styles.
Well, I can tell you in the 70s, when I went to art school, you know, you had to love Yves Klein because, you know, he would be properly dressed in like a white shirt, black vest, black pants, you know, tie loosened. And then there'd be all these naked women and he'd be putting paint on them and then they'd roll on the canvas. And as a 16-year-old, you go, that's what I want to do. And then he did this other thing. He called them fire paintings, and he literally had a flamethrower and he pointed it at a canvas and made shapes with it. And he had like a whole, again, in a full, you know, white shirt, sleeves rolled up a little bit. And he, you know, put the flame on the white canvas, and some of it would char a little bit, and some of it would start burning. And then he'd give a sign and he'd have like three or four firemen in the same gallery room, the studio, in full on fireman gear. And they'd come up, shh, and they'd put the fire out and then he'd start over again. I mean, the man just did some really outrageous and fun things.
Oh, I need to see this. I'm going to Google that immediately after this.
All right.
It's fantastic.
Have you tried doing, I've seen your drawings and I love them. Have you tried working with color or with paint?
I have lately wanted to get a canvas and just try it, you know, just to see what it's like to mix colors. And, you know, I don't know what I would do or what I would paint, but it'd be fun to try. I'm inspired to do it. You know, I think one of my favorites is there's a wonderful museum in Vienna called the Albertina. And they had a beautiful display of Monet paintings, and I'm really attracted to the Monet. I love it. And they have Picasso there as well, but the Monets just really speak to me. I don't know if it's the colors. There's a softness to the textures, the touches. I would love to try something like that just for fun to see, you know, that style, if you will. Obviously, he's a genius, but, you know.
Right. And the fun part is you never know what's going to come out. Like, I always figured myself that I would I would make big statements like, you know, with paint, you know, not little things, just big brush strokes. And then last year I started doing a little work with paint, and I discovered that what I was attracted to was really little things, you know, little repeating patterns and textures, which, you know, what I'm trying to say is that painting itself is sort of a discovery of who you are. So even when you start out with Monet, it'll be interesting to see where it takes you, because it could be anywhere.
That's a really great point. I've never tried it, so I would love that experience. I mean, I love art museums so much. I feel like I really just lose myself in those places. I mean, I would love to have the experience of having a canvas. I really should just try it. There's a museum I came across in Zagreb, Croatia. I was on we had three days there, and I spent a lot of time walking. And I always wear earbuds when I'm walking, and when I'm in an art museum, I always have earbuds on. I put there's a artist has a the name of the album is Lucid Nation, and I put Lucid Nation on this loop. I'll loop one song that I just particularly like, and I'll go into an art museum with this song looped. I don't want to hear anybody. I don't want to see anybody from the tour. I just want to totally zone out and just dive in deep to the paintings and sculptures, whatever's there. And I find it just a wonderful experience walking around. I had that whole museum. It was called the Modern Gallery in Zagreb. I had the whole place to myself. No one happened to be in there. I paid the fee and I walked in, and it was a phenomenal experience walking around that whole place and all the different paintings. And yeah,
Toto was probably on the beach. That's where they went. I would be with you. I'd be in the museum. I don't need to be on the beach. There's nothing there.
Oh, well, you actually, I believe you were the one who really turned me onto these museums. You took me to the MoMA in New York City in 2009, which was just a fantastic week in New York that we had with the shows, the Blue Note. And when you took me there, I was pretty much hooked after that experience. And thank you for that. Right.
Hey, did you ever, I know you guys have played in Cologne. Did you get a chance to go to the Ludwig Museum there?
I didn't at the time. It depends on the, some days we don't have off days and I'm stuck at the venue. I would love to go sometime. I was able to get a cold spear though when I was there, which was
good.
Really good. I enjoyed it.
You don't have to answer it, but it is the best beer in the world, isn't it?
It is very, very good. I loved it. Yes. Yeah. It was very nice.
Would you believe that one time in the mid-90s, we were over there and John would drink 20 of those?
Really?
Yeah. This was, you know, a different time. But you know how skinny the glasses are.
Yeah, well,
there's not
small,
that much in them. They're tiny. But, you know, he did like it. I was very proud of him.
Yeah. Oh, I liked it too. It was very good. I think there's something to be said about a performance as an artist being in the moment versus in the recording studio. Like even running lights, I feel is a performance. You know, when you're
absolutely
running lighting, to me is also an art form with paint. You're painting with colors. You're trying to be on the beat. I think performing in front of you know, an arena full of people, or performing on the stage in front of, you know, people, I think there's something that you tap into. I don't know what it is in your brain where you, once you get to that zone, it's like you shut off reality, everything around you. You're just in the moment. And I think that's a wonderful place to get into. It's almost like, I don't know if it's a meditation or where we go. I don't know how you, what do you feel about that when you're performing? It's you're just in the moment, right?
I find at best you get into these zones where everything slows down for you. Like, you know, you seem to have so much time to go from that fret to that fret on that other string. And, you know, you just working on the smallest increments of the rhythm. you just hear it. There's like a brightness to the room and to the sound that is hard to, you know, get any other way. Because even when you record yourself, you know, it's in spurts, right? You do like, even if you did the whole rhythm for one song, let's say that's 5 minutes, then you stop and you go into the studio. So then you put a different hat on and you're out of that experience. But if you do a live performance, it's like an hour and a half. And after a while, if you're lucky, you just get into this zone that there's nothing like it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember playing when we were playing too. I was, it's interesting. Sometimes you can look around inside your mind and think a little bit, or you're just in the zone and you don't think at all. And that's the part where I love the most is not thinking. Because when you all of a sudden become aware, it's almost like you're sleeping and you're not quite awake yet, but you come aware of that you're sleeping, you're kind of in a dream state, you know, and then you're kind of conscious. So it's like losing that consciousness, I think, is really the most amazing part of the performance.
So we need to make
the moment.
Right.
In the moment.
We need to make you a shirt that says Church of Performing.
Yes.
You lived in Santa Fe for like a year, 2 years, maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
We had what we called Flamenco Mondays, and we would just bring videos and have a pizza and some beer and just talk about music. And it was really fun.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I love those times. It was the green chili pizza with the green chili and feta cheese was just, that's the winning combo.
Yeah, agreed.
One thing about the touring is the food. I think trying the different foods in different countries is just an amazing experience. There was a restaurant that you had recommended when I went to Lucca, Italy. I can't remember the name of the restaurant there, but you highly recommended it and I had gone. And I think I probably had the best meal of my life. It was just phenomenal. I could not believe how good it was. I believe I had a veal there, but I remember traveling and the food in Japan is fantastic. The Kobe beef, you know, it's cooked just right. It's like butter, you know, it's amazing.
It's like butter.
It's like butter. Yeah, exactly.
He played like butter.
It's just, there's something about traveling that really, I'm not sure what I like more, the traveling or the performing or the lighting. There's no need to like one more than the other. It's just the whole package that is just an amazing experience about traveling. And I think one of my, and the food in Mexico too, I love the food there. I love spicy foods. So one of my favorite drives that I did was in Mexico. From Puebla to Veracruz. And I think that is just a phenomenal drive. You start off in the high desert in Puebla, which is close to Mexico City. And I don't remember how long it was. It was a day trip. And you drive through the high desert and there's a beautiful volcano that's about 17,000 feet that's off in the distance. You end up kind of passing that along the way. And then you descend down into these tropics. I've never seen anything like it go from desert to tropical. It was like Hawaii. It looked very volcanic, very tropical. And to just see that transformation and drive way down to this valley, and yet still you could see this volcano that was in the desert, the peak of it up high, to see the desert and the tropics. And then after you're through that, it turns into what looks more like Florida, where it's flat and tropical out to the Gulf of Mexico there. And then I tried some fish, some good fish in Veracruz. I'm addicted to traveling. I feel like there's something with it's the constant newness of everything and the trying the foods. Do you find that the same with traveling and the food?
I would imagine that's what made the last year and a half or so hardest for people like you and me that are so used to traveling, to suddenly be in one place. I don't remember the last time I've spent this much time in Santa Fe. I just haven't, you know, I've been here since the end of February last year, so that's now what 15-16 months, and I don't think I've been here for that long very often, if at all, you know. So yeah, it's definitely, it's the food, it's also just I find that you get stuck in a frame of mind, and it's not just you that gets stuck. Everybody around you, your friends, see you a certain way, right? And if you suddenly decided that's, I want to try something else, it's them that point out that that doesn't sound like you. Why are you saying or doing that? And that's something that can only really be remedied by traveling and just assuming. Maybe I remember as a 19-year-old traveling in Asia, I assumed different, you know, personalities sometimes daily, and I was like, well, what would it be like if I was more like that? What would it be like? And since nobody knows you, they just accept you as that person, right? And so, yeah, I think travel is an amazing education, and I think the things that you eat or hear or, you know, witness, they all become part of this soup that we are, you know. It's like we are not one specific person from birth to death. We're just constantly changing as spices are being added.
Great way to put it. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And thank you for touching upon staying at home so much. It's been difficult for me to not have that touring in my life and being in this. I've never been in the same place for this long. I mean, the last 20 years since 1999, I was on a tour almost every year, at least a few of them, you know. Right. And I mean, I'm so, man, there's just something about just even getting to the airport, you know, I love it. You know, I don't ever get tired of it. I think touring is something that you really need to love, traveling and just love the lifestyle. Because I mean, let's be honest. I mean, a big part of touring is waiting, right? I mean, we're waiting to get on an airplane. We're waiting to get on stage to perform. We're waiting to catch a van, you know. I mean, you just gotta love that lifestyle. I've never been like, oh no, the plane's delayed. It's like, okay, let's go get a coffee, you know.
Right. Yeah, you know, waiting for sound check, waiting for the performance, waiting afterwards to, you know, for the bus to come back. Yeah, I hear you. It's what that life is like. And it does give you a certain equanimity with some of the other things that are happening, that the straits go, oh my God, the schedule. And you just go, it's just what it is, man. Planes will be late and things happen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even just to get to the Åland Islands in the middle of the Baltic, I remember it was about close to about a 30-hour travel day. And we because they flew me to the East Coast first and then over to Stockholm. And then we had a 6-hour layover to get onto a boat, which was going to be another, you know. Yeah. So yeah. What was funny, you just got to make the best of it. So 6 hours to kill. We're here. I'm tired. I've already done two legs just to get to Stockholm. We had 6 hours in the airport to kill. They gave us a day room to share, but I didn't really want to do that. I was walking around. I was just all souped up on coffee. And then it was time to get a beer. And so, you know, king size beer. And it's like, let's go wait in line. What do you mean? I'm like, let's go to the check-in counter. Why not? I mean, there's a check-in counter. It was super long. So we went over and we were just dying laughing. We're waiting in line for a flight that just we weren't going to be on, but we had to kill some time. So we're just waiting. You know, come on, man, this line's really long. You know, we could have left whenever we wanted to. So we waited for like 20 minutes in this line just for fun. I'll text you the picture. I have the photo. It's fantastic. Yeah. I'm holding a coffee. Oh my God. We were in tears laughing because we weren't going anywhere.
Right. That's what I mean. You just get a slightly different way of looking at things. You know, like I remember, I mean, it only happened maybe 2 years ago. I was on a flight from the East Coast, from Florida back to Santa Fe. And there's a small plane that takes you from Dallas right into Santa Fe. And they had a problem with it. And so I'm arriving at like, you know, 7 o'clock, and at 7:30 or 8, the flight is supposed to take me to Santa Fe. You know, I'm here an hour later and I was just going to go home. Instead, I get there and the flight has been canceled. They had a problem. You know, when is the next flight? Well, tomorrow at 7:15. Okay. And a few guys, you know, talked to the flight personnel and they were really irate. I have to be there. I have to do this. I have to do that. And then I just went up and said, you know, you know the airport better than me. What's the best place to spend the night on it? I don't want to go to a hotel. And they were so relieved that somebody wasn't yelling at them. They were like, oh, you know, it's gate number, blah, 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 over there in that section. It has charge, you know, points to, so you can charge your phone and you can like pull out the front so you can lay back. Yeah. I'm like, thank you so much. I'll see you in the morning. You know, it's not a big deal because you've done all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got to suck to be in their position. They didn't want the flight to be canceled. Then they got to deal with people being total assholes to them. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, So yeah, no, it's amazing how you learn to go with the flow. I feel like what touring has taught me also is just to have the greatest amount of patience in the world, just to not, you know, because it is what it is. I mean, I've been dropped off in Chile at La Serena somewhere, and I was dropped off at 1 a.m. and the lighting rig was in pieces all over the stage. I was like, it's gonna be a long night.
You fixed it by the next day?
It wasn't up. It was to the local crew, but I'm just sitting there watching them, you know, but they had most of it working. And the same things happened in Surabaya in Indonesia. And I remember getting there and it was park hands, pieces, just pieces, like not even park hands that were, you know, just that come out of the box, like built, you know? And I'm just like, oh man. But that was when they said, oh, they saw it, you know, our tour manager at the time. Oh, well, let's get you back to the hotel. And I ended up at a karaoke bar with Luke at the time. So. While we waited, you know, so yeah. Perfect. That was early 2000s. Mm. But yeah.
It's a weird life, but it's a good life, right?
I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, if you had asked, I'd like, what else would I do? I don't even know. I mean, I love it too much. And if I'm not on the road, I can create at home. And I'm grateful for the technologies of today that we have to be able to even create video now. To, you know, I couldn't create the videos 10 years ago that I could do now. I mean, it's fantastic. And I got this new Apple M1 Mini, and it's been, man, that thing has been killing it for video renderings. It goes really fast.
That's great.
Really enjoying it. So,
well, we should definitely talk again after you've tried your hand at painting. I can't wait to see what that will look like.
Thank you very
much. I hope
you
do it. I hope you do it for sure.
I will. Oh yeah, okay. I will. I'm not sure I'll share it if it's not good.
If it's not Monet, I ain't sharing it.
Yeah, if it's not 100% Monet, you know.
Well, all right. Well, let's leave it all at right. That. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.